Richard Kingsville with you on 2010. Well, Mark Ronson is the acclaimed English-born producer who's helped shape the sound and careers of some of the most successful acts of the last decade. People like Amy Winehouse, Adele, Daniel Merriweather, Lily Allen, Robbie Williams, the Kaiser Chiefs and Wale, to name just a few. He's also put out two solo albums himself. The last one was 3 years ago and it was called Version. It was huge in the UK, going triple platinum. And on the album, he and his band added a bit of funk and lots of horns to cover versions of the likes of Radiohead, Coldplay, The Jam and The Smiths. Ronson turned 35 earlier this month and he's back as of next weekend with his new album, his third release. It's called Record Collection. He's worked once again with a lot of people in making this album. He's teamed up with good mate Alex Greenwald from Phantom Planet in the writing of some of this material, but he's also collaborated with Jonathan Pierce of the drums and Nick Hodgson of the Kaiser Chiefs. The guests on the album include a wide range of stars. Boy George to Ghostface Killah, Spank Rock to D'Angelo, Simon Le Bon to Andrew Wyatt of Mike Snow fame. We're going to hook up with Mark Ronson himself from our London studios right after this. This is one of the highlights from the album, featuring Ghostface Killah and also Mark Ronson on vocals. This is Lose It in the End. Hey, yo, what do we do when it comes to the ladies? Cause things ain't changed since the early 80s. A few babies, but I'm still picking them crazies. You wanna battle with courts like Jim Slim Shady? I ain't having that, nope, I ain't having that. You're just trying to get rich like Miramax. Force my hand, girl, to let you know. Cause getting over stocks is real unnatural. Yeah, I said too much again. Yeah, I pushed too hard again. And I wanna stop, but when I was losing it. Okay, from our ABC London studios, Mark Ronson joins us on Triple J right now. Mark, good to have you with us.
Thank you.
Now, I was going to ask you right at the very end about when you are coming to Australia, but let's start there because I know later on this month you're going to start touring and doing your first shows in the UK. What are your plans? Are you bringing a band to Australia for this album?
Absolutely. Going to bring as many people as I can, including, you know, MNDR, Rose, Spankrock, Kyle, hopefully, Alex Greenwald. So, yeah, I think our plan is to come to Australia in March.
Okay. Is that pretty much locked in your end, do you reckon?
I hope so. I don't want to jinx it or say something or maybe we get fired by some promoter. But I think the thing is that we all ended the tour in March on the last time, like the very last shows that we played were on the Global Gathering Festival, and I'd never gone to play with a band in Australia before, and it was such a brilliant way to end the tour, and I think everyone's just excited. And then on top of it, like, we've had our first like top 20 hit in Australia now with Bang Bang Bang, so it's kind of even makes it sweeter going there and playing when, you know, people have heard a song on the radio.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really exciting. I think there'll be a lot of excitement behind this record and also seeing what you're going to do on stage. Are you nervous about what you can achieve given the cast of characters that are involved in the making of this record? How are you looking at the live performance of it?
Yeah, I mean, I get nervous like plugging my guitar in at soundcheck. So yeah, the thought of actually singing in front of people. I was actually speaking to Dave McCabe yesterday from the Zootons, and he wrote the bike song, he wrote Valerie, and he said to me, I saw some YouTube footage of you, like, you looked pretty nervous singing. And I was like, I don't want to look at people when I sing. Like, how is there a way to do that? I didn't know if there's a kind of a way to, like, to wear blackout sunglasses, but it's definitely weird, like, suddenly coming from being a DJ, and I only sing two songs in the whole set. I mean, it's not like I'm running out there and belting like Daniel Merriweather for an hour or something, but it's definitely a new, raw thing. But the other stuff I really enjoy, the playing keyboards, and it's such a great band, and everyone's so locked in with each other and having a good time that, you know, that stuff I think I can deal with.
Okay, all right. But the option for you to sing on this new record, is it right that it basically came about because Jonathan Pierce from the drums, who was one of the co-writers of a couple of the tracks off this record, he didn't actually want to vocalise? He didn't want to actually appear as a singer on this record?
Yeah, we had just met, and he wrote two of the best songs, I think, like hookiest songs on the album, Lose It in the End and You Gave Me Nothing. He just wrote them in, like, I would send him the track and he would send back like 40 minutes later, like, this fully formed song with this brilliant melody. And I love his voice and I got very attached to his voice on the demos. But he had said, you know, my band, we're just staking out our identity and they're worried if I'm on your record, it's going to overshadow. And I said, that's fair enough. So I tried to get some different people to sing it, and for some reason it just, nothing sounded quite good. And like, Jonathan has a bit of that like virginal, really pure tone to his voice. And I guess one night I just thought, well, I haven't sung since I'm 14, so maybe I still sound like a 14-year-old. Let's try and sing it. So me and Alex went in the booth, Alex Greenwald, and he produced me singing. And I think, like, what we got out of it, I mean, it's not as good as Johnny, but I think when he first played it to his band, he thought that they thought it was actually him, like with a cold or something.
So, oh, really? That's a good piece of flattery there. You were a one-take type of singer. How did it prove that night when you actually did try to lay down the vocals?
I think you have people that, like, the people that I've got to work with, like Amy Winehouse and Daniel Merriweather and Adele, who are, you know, sort of 3 to 4 take singers. I'm what I like to call a 35-take singer.
Right.
But I'd rather sing it 35 times and get it in the end with my own natural voice than sing it, you know, 6 times and then auto-tune it. Because the thing with auto-tuned pop music, you know, there's some good stuff, and I like Daft Punk and the way when they used auto-tune and vocoders in that aspect, but when anybody can sing a song and you can't tell the difference between, I don't know, Britney Spears and Kesha and everyone, like, it's just, what's the point? Could be a robot singing, you know?
So when you did actually, Mark, when you did actually get it right on the 34th or 5th, whatever you said, 35th take, when you actually did nail it and you listened back and you thought, oh, that's not half bad, did you get that sense of maybe I should do more, or did you know your place on this record by that stage?
I got the first take after about 35 takes, and then Alex Greenwald said, you know, now you're going to have to double it. So that was like another 35 takes. But I think that the only reason I sang the other song, Record Collection, is because I wrote it with Nick from the Kaiser Chiefs, and I like the lyrics so much. So it's called Record Collection. It's sort of about this, like, doofy guy that, like, just wants to be the biggest pop star ever, or maybe he is, but he's just an idiot. And the lyrics like, I ride around cities in a chariot, I get preferential treatment at the Marriott and all this kind of stuff. And I was like, I want to sing that because it's so ridiculous. And also, it could be interpreted as me taking the piss a little bit out of, like, what people might think my own lifestyle is like. So it made sense to sing it. That one, Simon Le Bon sings the chorus. So even if the verses are a bit, like, crap, you've got a superstar in the chorus.
Okay, on Triple J on 2010, that is Mark Ronson and the Business International from the album Record Collection. That is the title track, featuring some help from Simon Le Bon, Wiley and Mark Ronson doing some of the singing in there as well, as he spoke to me about just before that from our London studios.
I ride around town, around, with the pedal to the metal, the purple, or whatever. I ride around.
Okay, Richard Kingsmill with you on 2010, this evening on Triple J. Time to get back into our conversation with Mark Ronson, the acclaimed producer and artist. His new album, Record Collection, is coming out next weekend. Let's continue on the conversation by talking a little bit more about Mark singing for the very first time on this new album.
I guess the whole thing of going from being a producer to trying to sing is you realise as good as it sounds in your head while you're doing it, it sounds like shit in the other room a lot of the time. That I notice that always with singers when they'd be like, when I'd be producing them, they'd be like, but it sounds great in here. Like, well, maybe the mic, there's something wrong with the mic. And there's never anything wrong with the mic. It's just when you're in the middle of it, you don't notice all the, like, little things that are going wrong.
Yeah, and it would be very hard for you, although would it be easier for you, given that you've worked with such a range of fantastic vocalists already as a producer, was it kind of easy for you to know as you were delivering which were the good ones and which were the bad ones?
Not really, I guess, because I'm still kind of learning, and working with what I could safely say are some of the best vocalists of our generation or their generation, which would be Amy and Adele and Daniel and whoever else. It's not the kind of thing that you listen to me and go, like, I could do that. You know what I mean? It's like, it doesn't, if you watch Jimi Hendrix play guitar for 80 hours, it doesn't mean you're going to pick up the guitar and be able to do that. I just kind of, it was like being a full on naked baby, you know? It was like anything that I might have learned from my years of producing, like, meant absolutely nothing to me.
Okay. Why did you want to call it Record Collection?
Well, once that song was written, the song with Nick called Record Collection, I guess just coming with one foot in DJ culture and the other foot just being a huge fan of music always, it just kind of made sense. And my last album was called Version, which was Version was always the thing they put on the back of reggae albums. Instead of writing the instrumental, they call it the version. And so that kind of had that kind of hip-hop, you know, DJ history part. And Record Collection just made sense. And all the people on the album, from Spank Rock and Pill all the way to Boy George and Simon Le Bon, are people that literally I have bought their music. Like, I like their music. I love it. I play it on my own occasion. So the fact that they're on that, I think that most of the records that I make for myself are one half as a producer and a writer, and the other half just being like a stupid fan. Like, I can't wait to make this shit, you know?
Yeah, does that make it hard? I mean, you must get nervous then still, even though you've met a lot of people and worked with a lot of famous names. Do you still get that sense of nervousness when you work with someone like Boy George?
With someone like Boy George, I guess there's a I'm just as nervous as I am working with anyone for the first time, because you want it to be good. But I think those kind of fan nerves, you get out the way quite quickly. Maybe that lasts the first half an hour, and then you strike some kind of other bond or something where you just, like, you're just two people in a room talking about music that levels the playing field. The fan stuff doesn't come out so much, I think, in resulting in the nerves. It just kind of makes a little bit of this joyous noise, I think, that across that I can't seem to get out of my own records. You know, when I'm doing a song like Love is a Losing Game or something with Amy, that's her words, that's her emotion. It's easy for me to produce it in a sad way or whatever's but right for the track. But when I'm doing my own record, like, it's annoyingly, relentlessly happy all the time, and I wish I could figure out why that is or put an end to it.
Okay. I want to go to that Boy George track in just a moment, but when you were putting together the idea behind this record, did you have a firm idea after Version what you wanted to do next?
I pretty much had absolutely no idea what I was going to do next. I was a little bit nervous because of the success of Version, and Version being something that I made, you know, without a record deal and just really in my bedroom, and what it went on to become, and also get me a bit pegged as this kind of trumpet covers guy. So I guess the most obvious thing going into this album was that I would leave the trumpets and the covers behind, and that would be a good place to start. And then I'd been working on the Duran Duran album and spent a lot of time with Nick Rhodes, learning my way around a lot of those beautiful analog 70s synthesizers. So I thought we'd bring in some of those and just see where we started out.
Mark Ronson there. This is Killer. This is the track with Boy George and also Andrew Wyatt from Mike Snow on it. This on Triple J is called Somebody to Love Me. 2010, Triple J.
Over and over, is it really over?
Okay, on Triple J, it's a killer, isn't it? I reckon so anyway. I reckon it's the centrepiece of the album too. That track from Mark Ronson and the Business International featuring Boy George and also Andrew Wyatt from Mike Snow. That track is called Somebody to Love from the Mark Ronson album Record Collection, which is going to be released next weekend. We're going to feature the album as of tomorrow morning, so you'll hear plenty more of it. If you're just dying to hear the whole thing though, you can stream it at the moment at the Triple J website. We've got it up, the full album, up to stream. We've got it up for, well, basically until Friday this week, so I wouldn't leave it for too much longer than the next couple of days. If you can't do it tonight, get online at triplej.net.au and you'll see a link through from the front page to where the stream sits. After you've listened to it a few times, feel free to let us know what you think of it as well. I think it's set to be pretty big this year for Mark Ronson. And as he said when I spoke to him just recently, he said that the band that he's got together will be coming to Australia around about March of next year.
1, 2, 3.
Triple J.
I wanted to find out from Mark, when I spoke to him at length about this new album, I wanted to find out how it actually got going. How did it actually start?
Look, at the time I didn't realise, but I kept putting off going in to start this album. I would keep picking up other projects and working on things that I really liked, like the Like album or the Rumble Strips. But I was also procrastinating because I didn't know what to do on this record. So I thought the first thing would be to go in the studio with four or five of my favorite musicians in the world, which is a few guys from the Dap Kings and Victor and Nick that play in this Afrobeat band in Brooklyn called Antiballas, and Alex Greenwald. So the six of us went in the studio for most of July and August, and we just wrote and wrote and recorded and just kept coming up with ideas and incorporating these synths kind of like a 60s, you know, funk rhythm section. And that's where we just started to feel where it was going and what the kind of better things were. And then we started bringing in people to write on those songs.
So it was kind of like late 60s, because I do hear kind of like Swinging London type sounds in some of the material, not all of it, but was it kind of like a late 60s ethic you were after?
Well, actually, we were listening to like four or five things a lot. We were listening to Fela Kuti, Afrobeat, and we were listening to Daft Punk, and we were listening to that old, you know that old song by Popcorn called Hot Butter?
Yeah.
Beep, boop, beep, boop, 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 boop.
Yeah.
Like those kind of synth, kind of goofy 70s synth records, because we were using the sound of those keyboards so much. That was a big part of it. And then the Dap Kings are such a great band rhythmically. That 60s, like, funk feel, that James Brown meters feel, just gets its way into the rhythm section, but it's kind of combining late 70s, 80s synthesizers with a 60s style of drum machine, and of like playing the drums, which is like maybe two eras that haven't existed next to each other so much.
So it was important for you to try to kind of clash the cultures with each of the songs?
I think so. Maybe not in every single song, but at least have the album a kind of mix. And I think that's what I do a lot. Maybe you combine these things that you love, but you do it in a way that it's not so obvious what each one is, and you want to kind of, it's like Play-Doh, you want to mold it into a ball where at the end of it the colors are a bit obscured and where it mixes. But if you think about a song like Bang Bang Bang, the synth riff almost sounds like it could be like a distant cousin of Jump by Van Halen or something. But then Homer is playing this amazing sort of New Orleans second line funk beat that then goes into double time in the chorus and then just becomes a bit like clubby and dancey.
How much of this is actually worked out in your head then? I mean, it sounds like there must be a lot of trial and error in the studio.
Oh yeah, it's so much trial and error. And you know, even over the process of 4 months of recording the record in Brooklyn, maybe the first month went well and we had maybe three or four ideas that went on the album, but you still got to have 15 great ideas to make an album. So even in November, you know, there'd be times I'd be in the studio, you know, 15 hours at a time, like nothing's going on. Everyone's staring at me like he has no idea what he's doing. And you just have to kind of trudge through those parts. And, you know, a song like Somebody to Love Me, the Boy George song, was probably the lyrics and melody were rewritten about four or five times till we got to the final song. You know, Kathy Dennis and Jake Shears from the Scissor Sisters came in first, and they had a great idea, but it just didn't fit the song. Then K-Narn came in, and that didn't quite work. And then finally, me and Andrew from Mike Snow and Alex Greenwald finished the lyrics. But the great thing was we got to borrow all the best pieces of the melody from what Kathy and Jake and Kenan and different people have written, and I think you just have to not stop till you know it's good enough.
So when did Boy George enter the picture then for that song?
Basically, sometimes when you're writing a song, you might not be trying to rip off a song directly, but you have an idea in your head like, wow, I wish this song was as good as this one or the equivalent of this song, but, you know, 2010. And while we were writing Somebody to Love Me, we kept coming back to Do You Really Want to Hurt Me? I think it was just because Andrew has a really soulful voice, like the same way George did, and it has a bit of a world beat to it, the way that Do You Really Want to Hurt Me was a reggae song. And it's just a bit of a sad love song. And we just kept coming back to that. And then when we were finished writing it and Andrew had sung the vocal, I called him the next day and I was like, what do you think if we asked Boy George maybe to see if he'd like to sing on this song with you? I came to England a week later and I played it for him, and I don't know, I thought he was just gonna like be like, yeah, that's the jam, like throw up a mic, I'll go in now. And he was like pretty subdued, and I don't even know if he really liked it that much at first. But then he went home, and during the course of the week he'd email me from, you know, every now and then, like, oh, I like this line. And I was like, oh cool, I think maybe he's into it. And he came back and he just sung it, and he just brought it to a whole nother level.
It's a real standout. It's such a beautiful track. It's like the whole record's got some really, really fantastic moments. That one just seems to have something really special about it, the quality of that track.
I think so. I don't know. That's probably just because my record can be quite like upbeat and fun most of the time. That's maybe the song that I'm most proud of that I've made in my own records, because it does have an emotional weight to it. And I think a lot of that has to do with Andrew and George's vocal performance.
I once was in my eyes.
Okay, on Triple J, it is such a great track. That is Mark Ronson and the Business International featuring Boy George and Andrew Wyatt from Mike Snow. That track is called Somebody to Love Me from the album Record Collection. Mark Ronson before that talking about the genesis of the album and also of that track in particular. Okay, Mark Ronson and the Business International there with Lose It in the End. Mark Ronson singing himself on that track, as is Ghostface Killah. Ghostface Killah from the Wu-Tang Clan has worked a number of times throughout the years with Mark Ronson, and I remember reading a couple of years ago that the two had never actually physically met. Now, when I spoke to Mark Ronson recently, I was really surprised to find out that that hadn't changed.
The weird thing is we've still never met. And, you know, when I started DJing in 1993, I bought Wu-Tang Clan's Protect Your Neck. And Ghostface has always been one of my favorite rappers ever. And he's on my first record. And even though he'd done my first record and something for Amy Winehouse and now this one, I'd never met him. And I actually kind of never spoke to him on the phone because I was more worried that if he heard me talk or he thought I was an idiot or there was some awkward conversation that it would be over. And I just thought better he doesn't speak to me and just thinks I'm some like mysterious dude and it's better that way. So one night, I think he had just finished recording the vocal on Lose It in the End, I get a text from his manager that says, Ghost wants you to call him. So in my typical, like, non-confrontational way, I was going to pretend that I didn't see it, you know, when you lie to yourself.
Yeah.
And then I was like, you know what, screw it, I'm going to call him. So I got on the phone, he was like, yo, Mark, yo, it's so, I love making music with you. It's like, we got this history together. Like, we definitely obviously have this chemistry and stuff. And I was like, I cannot believe that Ghostface Killah is telling me that we have chemistry together. This is the most amazing phone call of my life. That was kind of it. We haven't really spoken since then, but it's kind of nice to have some kind of relationship with the people that you make songs with, you know, because of the Pro Tools and computer era that we live in, you know, you can make a whole album with, like, I don't think CeeLo and Danger Mouse were in the studio together once while they made that first Gnarls Barkley record. They were just sending tracks back and forth, and it obviously worked, and they made a great record. It's nice also to have some personal contact, I think.
Yeah. I actually read an interesting review of the record. I think that track works. And someone else read it and just went, it's like throwing, you know, mismatched boxes into the ring. It just doesn't work because, you know, Ghostface overpowers you. When you read a criticism like that about a track, do you kind of second guess yourself?
Not really, because that's exactly the result that I was going for on that song. Like, it's not like I was going there and I was like trying to hang tough with Ghostface. I wanted it to sound like an old RZA beat where he would have been sampling the Turtles or the Zombies, you know, because he would have been like back in 94. So that song to me sounds kind of exactly like I envision it in my head. And if somebody didn't like the way that it sounded, probably I don't really have a problem with that, you know.
Okay, Mark Ronson is with us. As you said before, Version was such a big hit for you a couple of years ago. How are you facing up to the release of this record as well, and how confident are you leading into its release?
I don't know, it's weird. Like, when I first handed in the record to the label, I felt good about it because I'm proud of it and I feel like it's a body of work. And, you know, before we started this album, I was terrified because I thought, I have to do an album of like 12, 13 original songs that are going to be judged against the songs of Morrissey, The Jam, Coldplay, Kaiser Chiefs, because that's who I was covering on this last record. And I think the minute that I just kind of relented to that, I was like, you know what, screw it, this, you have to think of this as a new album. And I think this album has a lot of rap, like, all across it, like most of the singles and stuff. You've got Q-Tip on one, Ghostface on another, Wiley. That cuts out half of the radio stations in England. Like, all the ones that played Stop Me and Valerie and Love Them All, like, are not going to play this record. So I don't think it can even be judged against a success. But then, like, when I found out that Bang 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 was this radio hit in Australia and New Zealand and Germany and places where we had never had a hit before, it's really encouraging that to make something that's quite different and maybe left field in a way and have that become the one that you're known for. I'd rather become known for like one of the more weird, different, eccentric songs than like something that maybe sounded a bit obvious. So I'm excited about it. I mean, I can't believe, as someone who came up DJing in hip-hop clubs in New York, that I'm in a position of putting out a third album internationally. Like, that kind of floors me in a way. And I can't wait to play the shows, and it just, I don't know. I don't know if it's going to sell what the last one did, but I know I feel good about it, and I think it's a better record.
Okay. Listen, fantastic to speak to you, Mark Ronson. It's interesting, isn't it, that, I mean, everyone kind of feels like you've had some sort of privileged upbringing or privileged life, but at the end of the day, success is marked by the work that you do, and people don't go out and buy records just because of, I don't know, you know, your connections or whatever. There's obviously a connection to the music that they've felt. So I hope the connection to this new record is strong for you, and that you will come to Australia as you promised in March. We've got it on tape, so we'll keep our fingers crossed that you do bring your band out here in March, because we'd love to see you out here again.
Thank you. Yeah, I would love to be out there.
The best new releases of the week, 2010 with Richard Kingsmill on Triple J.